The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Good evening, everyone. You are listening to Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio. It's myself, Aisha, in the studio this evening with you, and we have Vicky.
Hello there, everybody.
And Ellie as well.
Hello.
We are without a mat this evening, but we do have a nice pre-recorded film review in store for you. Coming up also on the show, we have a really nice half hour of new writing night content, which is theatre that's new writing, which, you know, is pretty, it's all pretty self-explanatory.
Does what it says on the tin.
Yes,
very
does.
Much so.
One of the pieces actually was recorded on Wednesday at our last Blackshaw new writing night. But without further ado, let's go straight into this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
So, Matt, this week on the show we are doing a review of Ant-Man.
Yeah, finally. We've been trailing this for weeks because I kept getting when it was coming out wrong.
It's been long overdue.
Yeah, and now that it is happening, I'm not even in the studio. But it's finally happening. I finally get to... this is another Marvel superhero movie for me to nerd out over. Although I think this one's been... I think this one was marketed badly. Because...
Yeah.
So the trailers made it look like a really generic superhero origin movie and hardly mentioned the fact that it's a heist movie, which is basically the only thing that marks it out from all the other superhero movies out there. Like, that's its unique thing, and they didn't really make anything of it.
I kind of felt like the marketing campaign was trying really hard not to make it sound like just another Avengers-type Marvel movie, but also weren't giving enough of the heist aspect. And they were kind of treading a line and then getting it wrong from both directions.
Yeah. So the what happens in this one is we've got Hank Pym, played by Michael Douglas, who was a Cold War-era superhero called Ant-Man. Secret superhero. Nobody knew about him, which is why he's never been mentioned before in any of the other movies.
How convenient.
So he did secret missions as Ant-Man, who can shrink really tiny. And when he retired from superheroing, he started a company, and his protege, Darren Cross, played by Corey Stoll, is trying to replicate his technology for nefarious means. And you can tell that Darren Cross is an evil supervillain because he talks like a press release even when he's at a semi-romantic dinner.
Is that the main mark that, of a supervillain?
Well, in this particular movie, yeah. Yeah, he's not particularly evil otherwise, other than that he's very corporate and profit-motivated.
Mm, just really a normal guy.
Yeah.
There is the stuff with the lambs, though. That was pretty evil.
Yeah.
I don't want to do any spoilers,
there's a lamb thing.
Prepare yourselves.
So, Michael Douglas' character wants to steal this prototype Ant-Man suit back, but he needs an expendable person to do it, so he finds Scott Lang, who is Paul Rudd, who is a cat burglar, who wants a second chance to redeem himself. So he's going to be the new Ant-Man and pull off this heist to steal the tech back, is basically the setup. So it works quite well in that it's a bit of a genre mashup, and the two genres do kind of refresh each other. So we've seen a lot of superhero movies in the last few years, and doing one that's a heist kind of refreshes that. And there haven't been so many heist movies in recent years, but adding the superhero element refreshes that genre as well. So it's not an especially elaborate or clever heist in the vein of sort of Ocean's 11. So there's no kind of wow reveal moment like that moment in Ocean's 11 where you realise they're the SWAT team. Spoilers.
yeah, how old is that film?
If you've not seen it, don't bother.
There's a statute of limitations on
spoilers. If it's over 5 years, I think it's okay.
Yeah, so it's not a classic twisty heist plot, but the fact that you have a person who can shrink really tiny and punch people really hard when he's tiny, and also communicate telepathically with ants. Or was it telepathically? No, it's through sonar or something.
Yeah, sure, something really
easy.
It's just through thinking. Like, you've got to be the ant.
Yeah, but it's got like a sonar thing, a sonar earpiece.
Yeah,
something like that.
Oh, yeah, no, they're wearing like a Bluetooth
headset. Yeah. And it's doing like Morse code to ants.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's a heist, and he has lots of different ants to use, like an ant that stings people and an ant that conducts electricity to short out electric things.
Who knew ants could do all that stuff?
Actually, it taught taught me a lot about ants.
Is it factually accurate for ants?
I don't know.
To a point.
There are definitely flying ants. Those exist.
Okay, so basically there are different types of ants is what we can be sure
of. Fire ants, they're a real thing.
Yeah, bullet ants, they're a thing. Yeah. So the sort of the visuals of the shrinking and everything, it is quite a good looking movie.
Yeah, and pretty sexy.
Yeah.
It's very slick.
Yeah. So it really makes the action scenes work, and it makes the comedy work as well. There are lots of really good laughs that come from something suddenly growing or shrinking, whether that's Ant-Man himself or an object, because they can shrink objects as well.
Hashtag Thomas the Tank Engine.
Watch
the film.
Thomas the Tank Engine's in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler.
Oh, yeah.
I wondered actually when that happened, do Americans have Thomas the Tank Engine?
I don't know.
Because I was thinking the whole way through, what was really great about the comedy aspect was that it's obviously there because Paul Rudd is a fantastic comedian, but also it's really written tightly into the script.
Yeah.
And I was therefore not surprised to see that the script is two Brits, isn't it? It's Joe Cornish and Edgar Wright.
Yeah, so this was originally Edgar Wright's movie to direct, and he famously, notoriously walked off the movie after being told to sort of put too many tie-ins back to the other Avengers movies.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So he split acrimoniously from the movie, and I think you can tell that there are sequences that really have his fingerprints on them. A few of the action scenes, and a few of the sort of telling stories through flashbacks, very quick cuts that feel very Edgar Wright, and the rest feels a bit more generic.
Mm.
And actually, other than the heist part, it is a really generic Marvel superhero movie. It's just got all the elements that we've seen before. So it's got the military industrial complex is bad, which is a lesson we learned from Iron Man and Captain America: The Winter Soldier. The villain is just the same as the hero, but weaponized. So we saw this in Iron Man, where the villain just had an Iron Man suit that was big. And in this one, the villain has an Ant-Man suit with deadly lasers.
With lasers!
Yeah.
Which actually looked really gawky and awkward, I thought.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it is supposed to be not quite finished prototype technology, I guess.
Yes, it was a bit naff.
Yeah. And it has this plot where the villain is trying to steal the super genius hero's special technology that only he could have invented, which, again, we've seen in lots of the Iron Man type movies, which always kind of annoys me a little bit, because this is why patents exist, because the only way that you can actually stop somebody stealing a piece of technology that you have invented is through legal means, because once you've invented something, once people know that it can be done, it will be invented again. You can't actually stop someone doing it just by stealing their prototype,
right,
which is the plot of all these movies.
Yes. I suppose, though, at least in this one, they have basically just about managed to reinvent the thing that's been hidden from them.
Yeah.
But it's... I think what I thought was really funny was that Michael Douglas's character obviously invents this massively amazing thing, and then in the 80s he's like, I'm really angry, and then punches the chief executive and storms out with his one item of this thing he's invented. And then it takes them like 30 years to come up with his invention again.
To reinvent it.
Which I felt like when they had sort of endless money at their disposal.
They could have done that quicker.
Yeah, a bit slow. A bit slow.
Very slow. What are they doing?
And it's also got the it's about a mentor protege relationship, Hank Pym and Darren Cross, and it's also it's really about dads, and so many I realized thinking about this how many of the Marvel movies are about dads. All the like Iron Man 1 to 3 all about Tony Stark and his dad. Guardians of the Galaxy is a little bit about Star-Lord and his dad. Thor, all about Thor and his dad.
Yes.
Even Age of Ultron, the latest sort of full Avengers movie, Ultron is sort of sees Tony Stark as his dad. It's another dads and sons movie.
Yeah.
And so this is about, it's about Hank Pym and his daughter this time, Hope Van Dyne, played by Evangeline Lilly, who you may have seen in Lost or the Hobbit movies.
Yeah.
It took me ages to recognise her. I just was looking at her thinking, I know who she is, I know who
she's
she is.
She's got one of those faces.
But I think it's because she's got such a different haircut
in this. It's very severe and
very
business-like.
Very severe, yes. Yeah. Which worked brilliantly, but she was sort of unrecognisable, actually. Yeah.
So they have she has a troubled relationship with her dad because basically she thinks she should be the one pulling off the heist. And really, she is the most qualified one to be pulling off the heist. But the movie is so much wants to be about dad conflict that it won't let her. And again, that gives it another parallel with another Marvel movie, with Guardians of the Galaxy again, because both have got this character who is not the main character, but there's no real reason why they aren't. Like, Zoe Saldana's character, Gamora, in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, is the one that the plot kind of hinges on and has the reason to be going after the villain. And yet we focus on Chris Pratt's character. And in this one, Evangeline Lilly's character is... she has all the hallmarks of a protagonist, but we focus on Paul Rudd instead.
Yeah. So This blow-in that we're just like, well, okay, you know.
Blow-in?
Is that not a thing that you guys say?
No.
That's
explain.
Australianism.
Oh, that's an... I'm sorry.
Does that mean he just sort of drifts in?
Yeah,
from the side?
He's just blown in off the street.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Accurate, I'll start using that.
Yeah. And it does mean we get all the fun training sequences of her grudgingly training him by punching him really hard.
Yeah, everyone loves the montage.
Yeah, and him clumsily learning to use his powers, which means that we get lots more comedy, which is good. But when you actually stop to think about it for 10 seconds, it becomes impossible to think of a good reason why she doesn't simply steal the suit and do the heist herself.
Yeah,
because that would be so much quicker, and it probably could have been done.
It wouldn't have been
20
a movie.
Years ago.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been a movie then.
Exactly.
Because we wouldn't have the conflict. But I don't think it does a good enough job of giving us a reason why that doesn't happen, other than Michael Douglas says no.
Yeah, and I'm so afraid that you're going to get hurt. I care for you so much. Yeah.
It takes ages for them to get around to that being the reason.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, the crying.
His motivation
thing.
Is believable. I understand why his character doesn't want her to, but I don't understand why she doesn't defy him, given that they have a strained relationship.
And that
anyway.
All her other behaviour indicates that she would just be like, don't care, gonna do it anyway.
So this is actually the end cap of Marvel's phase two of their movies. So they divide all their movies up into these chapter phase type things. This is the last phase two movie. I think it works as kind of as an epilogue. It's not really a finale. It doesn't really go with a bang. And it's a kind of odd, tonally slightly quirky movie to finish off a phase.
It's such a weird standalone, and that's what I, because like going back to our first sort of speaking about this on air, and you guys saying Ant-Man, I didn't think that it was an actual thing that existed.
It's not as well known.
I don't read comics, and I'm not all over the Marvel thing. But it still grabbed me as a film where I walked away from it being like, I can't believe that I just watched that. I can't believe that that's been made into a feature film, because it's a man who's wearing a suit, which is capable of a lot of really cool things, but he's also talking to ants and riding them. Like, that's crazy.
I think they needed to be more confident in it being a film in its own right.
I think so too.
I think all the tie backs, I can see why now you've said about Edgar Wright throwing his gauntlet down and storming off, because it's not fair to the film to be like, oh yeah, but we've got to mention Captain America now, because the audience might forget about lovely Captain America. So, but we can't afford Captain America for this film, so can we get his mate who does the flying? Can he come into the film? Because that would be nice. I just feel like it's unnecessary.
I mean, Anthony Mackie's great too.
Yes.
But I get you, but I take your point.
But I think it would have been a stronger film if they'd have put more confidence in it being its own film.
Because it's got the beginning, it's got elements of a strong kind of individual tone to it, but they're diluted. I just hope that what this means for the next phase of movies, which have got weird things like Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange and a few other things, that what this means is that they've got all the retreading out of their systems, and that they might have the confidence to try something a bit new.
I liked it as a film. I think it's really fun, and it's a really good thing to go and see.
Yeah.
Just because it's kind of hilarious.
It is really
fun. The montage of when, to you know, no spoilers, but like Paul Rudd gets the suit, and there's this fantastic montage of him being really tiny and just running around and being like
falling through floorboards and
it's
getting
incredible.
Into trouble. Yeah.
Like the way that they've done that is just amazing, and it's so exciting. And go and see it for those kind of montages, because it's
definitely
really
worth
fun.
Watching. Actually, it was the first film in ages that I saw in 3D.
Oh, really?
I know, because I was like, 3D, it's a fad, I'm over it. But then I was like, well, it's Ant-Man. He's tiny and then he's big and then he's jumping.
Was
and he's
it
running.
Good in 3D?
It was so fun. It was actually really, really fun in 3D.
Yeah, I don't do 3D because it's like, oh, it's a bit much.
I don't normally, but I think for a film like that where there's so much action and it's easy to follow action, because I think when there's big tracking sequences of vistas of action, 3D is actually a bit overwhelming. But when you're focusing on Ant-Man in this case as a one thing, it's really good.
Yeah.
I really found that with Age of Ultron, that I couldn't follow it all in 3D.
I struggle in 2D to follow some of the big
too fast.
So
much editing, so little time. Cool. So go and see Ant-Man if you want to see Paul Rudd being really cute, I think.
And funny.
And funny and just a great,
and
great
some amazing visuals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Matt, are you
don't
thinking...
ask me what I'm going to say next time. We're recording
I've
this.
I've completely
this is...
put Matt on the spot. We're in a pub.
You'll have to follow us on Twitter and Facebook to find out what Matt will be reviewing next time, and you can always put requests.
I don't
in
even
well.
Normally know on a Sunday, and we're recording this on a Wednesday.
Yeah,
so.
It's all, we're all over the shop. Matt, do you want to give your Twitter handle so that people can request to
yes,
you?
Yes, it is at
time.
Matt Boothman. That's Matt with two T's. Booth as in recording booth, and man as in a man.
You're a
tweet,
man.
Tweet me what you would like me to review.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks very much, Matt.
Cheers.
Welcome back to the Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio. You have just listened to our pre-recorded review, film review of Ant-Man, which we pre-recorded in a pub after our Blackshaw New Writing Night on Wednesday.
Yeah, it was upstairs at a pub. It wasn't a freakishly quiet pub.
No. Just to make sure that everyone is aware of that.
We silence the other punters. We're recording for a radio show. Put down your beverages and don't enjoy any chatter for the next 15 minutes.
They were really quiet.
Very quiet.
It's actually not a bad place to record.
It was. It sounded really good. I was actually surprised, because I left you guys there recording it, and I was surprised at how it didn't sound like you were where you were.
Yeah.
Amazing. It was nice, actually, just listening to that in the studio and having Vicky, who has actually seen Ant-Man as well, giggling along to our review. Vix, did you like Ant-Man?
I loved it. I agree with pretty much everything that was said in that review, actually. And Matt's got some great insights about this whole thing about dads and pleasing dads. And I think that's just, you know, the little boys reading the comic books who've all grown up into being filmmakers probably all have some kind of daddy issues. So I think it probably makes a hell of a lot of sense.
Yes.
I actually saw it in Chicago. Feel very proud of the fact that I
made a trip just to see the film.
Just to see the film. No, I was there on holiday. Me and Dave decided to go and go to the cinema, and Ant-Man was our number one pick of thing to see. We could only see it in 3D for the time that we wanted to go, and it was excellent in 3D. Mm. It's the first film I've seen in 3D for a while, and it was really good. But the biggest thing about it was just how much the American audience interact with each other and the film while it's happening. There's quite a lot of noise, and there's like kind of whooping and clapping and cheering and much, much louder laughing at the funny stuff. And I think I laughed louder because they were laughing really, really loudly. So I kind of may have found it more hilarious than I would have done in a British cinema. So that was quite an interesting experience, actually.
And they definitely all clapped at the end of the film, didn't they?
Yes, yeah. They love it. They're all so much whooping. Yeah, it was brilliant. But it was quite an interesting experience because obviously in the UK that's just not really the damn
no
thing.
Emotion.
No. But I recommend it. If you're ever in America, go and see a film in an American cinema, especially an action film or a comedy, because I think you'll get more out of it.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We'd like to thank Matt, who can't be here in the studio with us, for participating in that review. And we're going to jump into our Arts Thing of the Week, which is a pre-record by Helen. So it's we're doubling up, actually, this week, because Vicky's in the studio and we're going to talk about something after this. But we are first going to listen to Helen talking to us about Harper Lee's new novel, which is out, which is called Go Set a Watchman.
At last, Harper Lee's long-kept secret is in our hands. Go Set a Watchman, set after To Kill a Mockingbird, but actually written before, was published this week. A book publication might not normally make Arts Thing of the Week, but with queues outside bookshops and Reese Witherspoon's reading of the first chapter available to listen to on the Guardian website, this particular release is a real event. Up until recently, it wasn't widely known outside the literary world that there was another Harper Lee novel, so the publication has caused some real excitement and its own fair share of controversy. Go Set a Watchman shows a scout having grown up and the harsh realities of viewing your childhood through adult eyes. Some of the reviews are not exactly glowing, but having not yet read the novel, I find myself wondering if this is similar to what happens if one meets their hero. Perhaps Atticus is best left in the past, rose-tinted spectacles and all. Or perhaps the issue is hype, As I said, the release has been a real event, the first chapter also on the Guardian side in a frankly baffling interactive edition. Alternatively, the combination of these two, the much-feared sequel effect we're familiar with from cinema, is what's at play here. I'd recommend going to read Mark Lawson's review if you want to catch up on the news but not actually read the novel. Or wait for the inevitable BBC or cinematic adaptation. Oh dear, maybe Jean Louise's grown-up cynicism has rubbed off on me.
So that was Helen.
That was brilliant.
That was fantastic.
That was Helen Johnson talking to us about Go Set a Watchman. Thoughts in the studio about this latest release? We were chatting about it a little bit before we've just jumped on air. I think we're all a little bit confused.
Yeah,
slightly.
So many feelings.
To Kill a Mockingbird was a book I studied for my GCSE.
Me also.
And it as a result of that, is one of my favourite books of all time. I think anyone who is lucky enough to study that book as a part of an education course of some description falls in love with it. I know everyone in my class,
which actually is quite rare because often it has the opposite effect.
Yes, and I think you can't help but fall more and more in love with the world and Atticus and Scout and Jem and the cast of characters that you find there. And it was kind of the first time I'd read a book that had a really powerful message to give to me as a person that I could kind of carry with me every day. And I think that's quite a profound thing as well. So my worry, and I haven't read Go Set a Watchman yet, but my worry is that it will not do the same thing, because it was kind of like a once in a lifetime book for Harper Lee. And a part of its magic was that she had this one incredible story to tell in her life, which was semi-autobiographical story that she had to tell. And this new kind of sequel, but it's not really a sequel because it was actually sort of a first draft of Kill a Mockingbird. It doesn't quite isn't ever going to measure up to the
original. No, because they're not trying to make something original. They're trying to recreate the impact and the success of To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
And the thing that we've been talking about is kind of the controversy surrounding the sourcing of the text and the way in which it's been marketed to the public. So you just said then that it's actually an original or an early draft of To Kill a Mockingbird. And I know there's an article, a Guardian article that we've read, which is incredibly disparaging and very much of the view that it's just a media creation to make money. And there's sort of this murky situation where Harper Lee was not able to kind of run her affairs herself, and her sister was doing that. Then she died last year, and since then the publisher has kind of seemingly seized upon the opportunity to say, oh, here's this text that I discovered in a dusty attic, and oh, it's just a hidden gem, and isn't it wonderful that it's been discovered. But it's actually emerging that the text was produced by that publisher 2 years previously at a meeting to say, let's publish this book, and the whole thing was halted by Harper Lee's sister, who said, no, I'm in charge of the estate, and this isn't a new book, this is a very early draft of To Kill a Mockingbird, and it's not something that we want put out there.
I think it's pretty amazing that something that is essentially a first draft of a very well-loved novel has garnered so much hype, which is what Helen said. The hype around it is amazing, and I think it needs that hype and requires it, because it's actually not an original new novel, it's a first draft.
But I think they're
a shame.
They're kind of capitalising on people expecting something different to what they're getting. I think, and that's probably why there's been quite a lot of negative reviews from people who've read it, because, you know, if you're expecting To Kill a Mockingbird Mark II, you're going to be, I think, sadly disappointed.
Yeah. We will tweet a link to the Guardian article that Helen mentioned in that little piece, just so you can sort of have a peruse and figure out what's going on with this if you don't actually want to read the book. But Vicky is going to give us another arts thing. We're doubling up this week.
Yeah, we are doubling up. It's all the arts things this week. So as the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is starting towards the end of this week, and a lot of the theatre performer bods that we know are heading up to Edinburgh already or are already there preparing for the kind of opening day. It obviously takes place for the whole of August. I'm not going to go into too much detail about the festival, but I thought what I would do is give my kind of like five top tips for how to manage your time at the Edinburgh Fringe, and then five quick picks from Blackshaw of things that would be worth catching if you're planning to go up there, or things to look out for in London, because often these things kind of come back to London post Edinburgh, so you know, keep your eyes peeled.
I'm very excited about this. Yeah. just to stop you there, because I've you know, I don't know what the Edinburgh Fringe sort of Well, I know what it is, obviously, but I don't really get how it goes down and how you like would plan your time, because it just seems like there's so much stuff.
And it is overwhelming.
Yeah.
It is overwhelming.
I'm overwhelmed and I'm not even going.
So my first tip, and this is, I think, the single most important thing, I'm sure Ellie will agree with me, I hope you will, is that you get a pair of decent shoes.
For the love, about to say footwear.
For the love of Pete, get the right kind of footwear.
And a cagoule.
Ideally a cagoule also, yes.
And not stuff
like an anorak.
Okay. A waterproof coat. So not stuff that purports to be like splash proof.
Oh, no, no.
Or some like, you know, the fashion statement-y ones you get where they're like, this is a waterproof jacket, and then it's just lies.
It's like, go North Face or go home, people. Come on. Like
other brands are available.
Yeah, other brands are available. But like, you know, you need something that's going to do the job, because you're going to Scotland and you must not forget that. That's a very important...
You're going to Scotland. It's still summer, guys, but you're going to get drenched.
Yeah. That's basically it. And Edinburgh is, for the most part, hills and cobbles and cobbled hills. Mm. So you must have proper footwear, like walking boots. Even though you're in a city, walking boots are a necessary part of the experience.
Okay.
The second thing is, and this is related to Edinburgh's kind of geographical makeup as well, is that it's very important to remember that it's on more than one level, and that some roads on a map look like they intersect but actually go underneath each other. So what you should do is get incredibly familiar with the venues that you're intending to go to, and be really clear about your routes to and from places, and make sure you're always leaving yourself enough time to get from one venue to another, particularly if they're far apart from each other, because you probably will want to walk even if it's raining, hence the need for the cagoule. But you're going to want enough time to do that, and you're going to want to know where you're going before you set off.
Good tip.
The next thing I'm going to suggest is that you ferret out the free stuff. There's lots of free fringe. Sometimes actually like relatively big names in comedy in particular will do a paid show, but then they'll do some free stuff on the side. If you can ferret out that stuff, it's often a little bit ad hoc, but really, really fantastic and worth doing. But you've got to get there early to get a seat normally, if it's a bigger name. Sometimes it's just something you can just kind of wander into, and there's like four people watching somebody who's actually kind of like relatively big name, but it's really worth kind of looking out for that kind of thing. But that also means that you need to carry cash on you, so that you can reward people for their free work afterwards, you know, kind of based on how much you liked it. In terms of booking tickets, if you're keen to see a big name, and I do encourage you to go and see some big names in comedy while you're there, because you get to see really fantastic people in quite intimate venues and for a lot less than you'd pay in London, book them in advance if you possibly can, because the chances are by the time you get there, they'll have already sold out.
Yep, good, noted.
Yeah, the programme is huge. The programme of stuff that there is happening in Edinburgh is unwieldy, to say the least. So get some recommendations before you go. You can even do like basic internet searches. Like The Guardian do a really good kind of crib notes on a kind of a really good bulk of sort of 50-60 things that you could go and see that are their kind of top picks. Lynn Gardner does a great rundown of the theatre things to go and see in particular, and get recommendations from people that are there, people that have just been if you're going later in the festival. Look out for things on Twitter and social media for things that are getting some buzz, and then book your tickets.
Yeah, I think the buzz thing is key, because actually quite a lot of shows at Edinburgh, you get the big name comedians in particular, but then there'll be so many things that will just completely come out of left field that you would never have considered going to see based on their entry in the Ed Fringe programme.
Exactly.
But by week two, that's the thing everyone's talking about.
So when I went last year, we were staying with a couple of friends who lived locally, and one of them worked in the city centre, and it was the last weekend of the Fringe, and she said, my colleagues have been going on and on and on about this girl who does a show called Disney Rascal, and we must try and go and see it. And it's a free show, so we'll just turn up at this jazz bar and we'll go in. And we turned up, I think, 40 minutes early, and we were the last people to get in
this
place, because it was packed. Sean Walsh was sat in the seat in front of me because he was a mate of hers, because they'd done a show together. It was a little inconvenient, not going to lie. But that's the thing, is that this show had garnered so much hype, and it was fantastic. She basically sung kind of songs about the kind of inherent problems in Disney to the tunes of Disney songs, and it was very, very funny and really, really well done, and was like one of the kind of like best picks of the Fringe, a free show, you know. And we'd not have gone to it or heard about it if our friend hadn't kind of had a word of mouth recommendation. So you listen out for those. So speaking of recommendations, segue.
Nice, that was smooth.
here are kind of five, and this is five of hundreds, kind of picks that of things you could go and see. And the first two are acts that are pals of Blackshaw, so it would be wrong not to give them a shout out, but I do promise they are actually excellent recommendations.
We don't have friends that aren't talented.
I mean, so. We don't, this is true, but we would never recommend you something that wasn't good. Like, I'm just putting, it's a solid kind of grade A recommendation
quality.
Happening
we're
here.
We're giving you quality.
So the first is a comedy double act called Max in a Van. They've been winners of awards at the Fringe before for a show that they do called The Wrestling. But what I'm going to actually recommend to you is, although if you can get along to that, then please do get along to The Wrestling. You won't regret it. Their show, The End, which is, I've seen a tiny bit of it as a work in progress. It's fantastic. It's hilarious. They will play a multitude of characters between the two of them. In a multitude of scenarios, in a small town on the south coast of England that is about to experience the end of the world. And we've seen several shows that they've done that are kind of work in that format, including a high school reunion and a heist movie where they play all the characters, and they are just fantastic performers, so really, really worth seeing.
And they've just come off the back of a Radio 4 comedy series called The Casebook of Max and Ivan, so they're on the up and up.
Yeah, they really, really are. And it's kind of like a catch them while they're still cheap enough to see.
Yeah.
and they will be coming back to London, I'm sure, and doing runs of The End in London, so if you're not going to Edinburgh, do catch them in London. The next one is a great sketch pairing called In Cahoots, who are good friends of ours, Luke and Paul, and their show Two White Guys, which is funny when you can see the poster because one of them isn't white.
Yes.
They're both guys, though. They are both guys.
Nothing funnier than inaccurate descriptions.
Yeah. It's just hilarious.
It is.
And that show will be hilarious. I saw them at the Free Fringe last year. Their sketches are so tight and so imaginative, and you will really, really enjoy it. The next one is also a sketch show, which will, I'm sure, be very, very excellent and high quality. It's called Bucket. It's Ed Eelings-White from the brilliant Clever Peter and the hilarious John Poynting, who I saw at the Free Fringe last year. He's absolutely hilarious. He's in that Go Compare advert where they're doing a fitness class.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's got blonde hair and like a really strong jaw, and he speaks in a really funny voice in that, but that's not his normal speaking voice. But he's a really, really good character performer. And we're going to try and catch that, and it will be excellent. That's a promise.
I look forward to it.
The next one is the wonderful Bryony Kimmins is doing a show called Fake It Till You Make It at the Traverse, and I think that will absolutely be worth the ticket money. She's becoming incredibly popular, and it's very difficult to get, it's kind of more difficult to get tickets for her in London. And the fact that she's doing a long run in Edinburgh might make it slightly more likely that you'll be able to see her. And the last thing that I'm going to recommend is a fantastic physical theatre show from a company called a show called Blam, which is about four. This is one from Ellie Pickin. This is four office workers turn into stuntmen as they recreate insane stunts from action movies, and that's going to be at the Pleasance Courtyard, as is Max and Ivan and Bucket as well, actually. They're all at the Pleasance, which is obviously the kind of ideal venue to go and catch your comedy performances at the Edinburgh Fringe. And that's all from me.
That's great, Vix. So basically, Ellie and Vicky are going to the Ed Fringe together. That's why
correct.
Ellie's been nodding vehemently.
I'm excited.
It's made me very excited. When I was reviewing your email that you sent of all the suggestions, I was like, I must add my own suggestions to this, and then we will have a spreadsheet that works out what we will go to on what day and what location we will go to so that we never get lost.
This basically combines our favourite things, which is holidays, theatre, and organising.
And organised fun, very specifically. So yeah, we're excited. And we'll be, I hope, back on the radio post-Fringe to kind of give a rundown of some of the fantastic things that we saw there.
And we'll have some more stuff to talk about next time as well.
Yes, we are looking forward to that. The next thing coming up on the show is a piece that was recorded very recently on Wednesday at the Horse and Stables at our new riding night. It is a piece called The Gates, and it is written by Emily Jane Kerr.
So sorry to keep you waiting. Do sit down.
Not at all.
We're so busy at the moment, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yes, there were quite a few people around.
Right, so let's get down to business.
Brilliant, that's what we're here for after all.
Yes, so Anne.
That's right.
Anne Mary Jones.
That's me.
Wonderful, currently working at Eden Communications.
Yes, I'm a PR and marketing assistant there, so I'm really looking to move up the ladder.
Great, and a degree in marketing?
From De Montfort University, that's correct, top of my class.
And a master's from York, very impressive.
Well, as I said, top of my class, so I wanted to take it further. That's why I'm here.
We'll get to that in a bit. Secondary school.
St. Albans Girls' School.
Ah, yes. You were deputy head girl. Not quite head girl material then.
Well, I was deputy.
I'm joking, of course. Did you do lots for school, for charity?
That was the school's ethos, so I helped plan lots of events, but let's get back to now.
Good to know. And your primary school, Anne?
Rickmansworth Park, but surely that's not important, is it?
It's important for us to see the bigger picture here. Very important indeed. In order to know, we need to explore every possible inch of a person's background. Date of birth?
11th of February 1989.
So 26. You're very young to be here.
I know. I know everyone said it was too soon, but this position comes up so rarely, I felt I had to apply.
Apply? That's a strange...
Yes, you've got my cover letter there, haven't you?
No, I don't recall seeing
well,
it.
Well, let me just go over it verbally then, shall I? I think I would be incredibly suited to this position. I graduated top of my class for both my BA and my MA. I have excellent communication skills. I work well in a team, but I am also very self-motivated.
But that much is clear, but let's get down.
I won many awards at school. I was deputy head girl, as you know, but I also did a lot for charity and for those less intelligent than I was. I did a lot of tutoring.
Oh, this is great, Anne. But tell me about you. That's incredibly important to us here at the gates. Help me to get to know you.
Well, I'm very intelligent and I...
No. About you. What do you like? What do you dislike? Me, for example, I'm partial to a little bit of cheesecake. In particular, salted caramel. But I cannot abide snakes.
Well... I like reading.
Very good. I'm also a big fan of books, especially fantasy. What do you like to read?
A lot of non-fiction, actually. Autobiographies. I recently read The God Delusion.
Right. And dislikes?
Waiting. I suppose I am quite impatient.
Indeed. But more about you.
More?
Attitude to... relationships, perhaps?
Well, I always keep professional and personal relationships very separate. And career comes first, of course.
I'm told you do anything to advance yourself.
Anything? I don't know about that, but it is very important to me.
Important, yes. It's the reason you left your first job because you had an affair with your boss in order to progress your career.
Who told you that? It's not true.
You can't lie to me, Anne.
I'm not lying. What's he said?
And what's he said not important. What you say is.
So what if it was to advance my career? Surely ambition is a positive quality.
Ambition, yes. Cheating, no.
Cheating?
Yes. I would prefer just get to where you are by honest means. It would have made my job a lot easier.
Right. I suppose there's no chance of me getting this job now, is there?
The job?
Yeah. The head of marketing. I really am very good at my job, and I would be excellent at this one. I know I am very young, but I would do very, very well. If not here, somewhere else.
Head of marketing?
Yeah. Head of marketing.
Well, I'm afraid not, Anne. There is no job.
No job?
Well, there might have been at some point, but that's not what we're here to discuss.
It's not?
I know. Bear with me one moment. John? What have I told you about properly briefing people? Now we've got another one. Yes, well, we'll talk about this later. So, Anne, what do you remember before the waiting room?
Well, I was on my way here.
You weren't on your way here, that I can assure you. Where were you specifically?
I was in Starbucks. Prepping for the interview, then I came out of Starbucks and made my way over to this building.
Was it on the other side of the road?
Yes, I think so, but that doesn't matter.
I'm afraid it does, Anne. You, unfortunately, didn't look both ways when you crossed the road. You were hurt very badly.
This isn't a hospital.
I know. Sorry to be one to break it to you, Anne, but you're dead.
What? Is this a wind-up?
No wind-up. You are in fact dead, and I'm very sorry about that. And you should have been briefed before you came in, so I'm sorry about that too.
I can't be dead. I can't be.
You are, Anne, well and truly dead.
I can't be dead. How? I've never been ill, and what, I get hit by a car?
A bus, actually, but that's not important right now. We need to work out how to proceed.
Proceed? Proceed where? What, I can't just go on with my life? My parents. My poor parents.
They've been notified, and I can assure they were very upset.
Notified? Oh my God. I'll never see them again.
Anne, I understand you were in distress, but I really do need to get on. As I mentioned before, we are very busy at the moment.
Okay, go on.
We, I should say I, need to know how to proceed. And as I made some initial assessment, aided by your self-assessment when we first got here. I just need to go through it with you.
Fine.
So, you did an awful lot of work for charity and your school, and you really did do a lot to
help
others.
That's really good, isn't it?
Well, it is good. Though I feel it wasn't selfless. I believe all this was done as an opportunity for you to be noticed and or further your career.
Well, that's not too bad then, is it?
I'm afraid it is. That's greed.
Greed?
Yeah, I suppose it is. And a little bit of envy, but I'll just mark it down as greed. After that, they failed the boss. Lost greed. That's two strikes.
How many do I get?
Three. And you were very aggressive towards me. So that's wrath.
Wrath? Are you serious?
I'm afraid so. The main offender here is pride. It really is. But mixing adultery and you really are in a pickle.
I can't believe this. After all I've done for other people.
For me, the real nail in the coffin, if you excuse my phrasing, was this Starbucks. Really can't get on board with that, Anne. So I'm very sorry, but you'll have to go downstairs.
Downstairs?
Yes, that's right.
You mean to hell?
Hell, underworld, netherworld, perdition, fire and brimstone, whatever you want to call it.
You're sending me to hell?
That's right.
Me to hell?
I have, however, made a note that we'll review your case in 6 months or so, and see if you repent at all. Okay, case closed. If you could go for the door on the left, that would be marvellous. We do have a lot of people to see. Thanks, Anne. See you soon. Old Starbucks and the God Delusion. She never stood a chance.
Was a piece of new writing by Emily Jane Kerr called The Gates, which was performed at the New Writing Night on Wednesday.
Yes.
We just did.
And if you're interested in being involved in our New Writing Nights as an actor, a writer, or a director, submissions are always open for writing. You can find out more information and submit your writing on our website, which is blackshawonline.com, and there's a link for the New Writing Nights on there.
We're going pretty New Writing Night heavy for the latter part of the show this evening. The next piece that we're going to play is called Gertrude, and it has been written by Peter Klinger.
My name is Gertrude, and I am a queen. The queen. My belly has sanctified me and confirmed my role in the play. I'm about to give life to a child. The child that shall rule the kingdom when Hamlet, my husband, is gone. Polonius has just examined the belly and says it feels fine. So I feel fine as well. And the baby's fine too. Soon it will come to the world. Which is kind of scary if you think about it. That's why I don't think about it. Although I do. I think he might not like it. She. Well, I still don't know if it's a boy or a girl. She, that. But if it's a boy, I shall name her him. Hamlet. After my husband. I can't think of a better name for a boy. And if he's a girl, she. I shall name him. Well, I haven't actually thought of that.
How is the royal belly doing?
Although I have. I'm fine.
Is my seed kicking already? My little wishy-washy, squeezy, dizzy, prickly, licky, boisy-wosy son of a crow.
What?
My sunny boy and an heir to the throne.
Well, he might be a girl. She.
Don't be ridiculous. I took every measure to prevent it. I fed him with zucchini and fish. I kept the mandrake under the bed, and I had eunuchs singing softly during our...
And you made me wear pantalettes.
And I made you, yes. I made you wear pantalettes. Plus I tied up my left ball, yes. How could you possibly give birth to a girl? Haven't we even used the rare entry to give my wives a head start?
Shh. Could we do it again?
I don't want to scare the baby. You just keep the royal baby fine and I'll do the rest. Oh, and remember not to look at the moon. You don't want my son, the sun, to be bald.
I won't.
And don't listen to preaching. You don't want my son, the sun, to be deaf.
I won't.
Right.
My sweet husband. She's always been so caring. He.
And don't just sit there all day. You don't want my son to be lazy.
I want... Oh! Oh! Oh!
What is it?
Oh!
Is that... Is it?
The long-awaited day has come.
Shall I get the mop?
Earlier than I expected.
Help! Polonius!
Oh!
Fear not, for I'm coming.
Oh.
I'm coming. I've come.
Something's wrong with the royal belly.
Okay, the baby's coming. Oh dear. Breathe.
I am.
You?
How dare you tell her what to do?
Do you want to do it yourself?
Just see what he says, honey.
Now, keep calm. Keep calm. And push. Push.
It keeps coming back up.
There we are. You were very brave.
I know.
It's a boy.
It's a boy.
Of course it's a boy.
God, it's big. Can I untie my ball now?
Go out to the public and let them see the royal baby.
Well, he's got a good pair of lungs on him, that's for sure.
My belly has performed well. Its role has finished.
He's a big boy, he's quite heavy.
Now that my belly has flattened, my role has finished. But I still have my say.
What's the name of the child?
We're still working on the name.
Although I didn't.
It's the first time we've seen him, really, so we're...
Polonius!
What?
It's a nice name.
It is a nice name.
Polonius.
Polonius.
Polonius!
Polonius. What's wrong with Polonius?
Exactly, what's wrong with Polonius?
There's nothing wrong with Polonius.
Exactly, there's nothing wrong with Polonius.
Except for that we should change it.
You want to change it?
You want to change
it? I want to change it, I.
It was a nice name.
He wants to change it.
I am changing it.
So what is the name of the child?
Claudius.
Claudius?
Why are you doing this?
Am I not allowed to name the child?
He's not the child, he's my son. Why not Hamlet?
It's old fashioned.
It's a nice name, kingly name.
It is kingly, I admit.
A bit overused.
A bit.
Let's have a compromise.
A compromise?
A compromise, aye. Let's all agree on Hamlet.
Not much of a compromise.
Glad you agree.
Look, if you're not...
Hamlet it is.
Hamlet it is.
And so it was.
And so I was.
My wishy-washy, squeezy-deezy, easy boy, sunny boy grew, and I gave him all my love. As my son started to develop. And look after girls.
Boom, boom.
My marriage started to deflate. How was your day, my love?
Plots, plots, plots everywhere. There's not a single person in the castle who wouldn't lie. Ask them to fetch you slippers or bring you sweet Fanny Adams, for they suppose you're not being honest. Oh, the times. For goodness sake, what are you doing?
Don't you want your wife?
Bring me my slippers. Hamlet, come to daddy, my wishy-washy, cranky-dingy boy. Look at you. You're just like your father. Handsome.
Fat.
And powerful. One day, all this will be yours.
With the slippers.
So bright. My sweet, sweet Ophelia. They might have power over all the kingdoms and armies of the world, but we have power over them. How? First, promise a man all the pleasures in the world and then forbid him to get it.
Isn't it like?
Oh, it's teasing. Tease them right, and he'll give you everything.
It didn't work particularly well with your husband.
The king is dead! The king is dead!
It did work particularly well on his brother.
Long live the king! Long live the king!
Hey, Rosie. You see the pretty face?
Hmm?
She's all mine. Listen and learn the language of love. Hello, babe. How's it going? You like the rager, huh? Little hootenanny.
Gildy, I don't think she speaks the language of love.
Shut up. Listen, I've got my own gym. And I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you. I bench 100. No, 200. Easily. You're impressed, I can tell. Oh. So you probably want to have a drink with me? I have a nice horse.
What?
You like horses. I have a nice one. You don't want to be picked up then? Listen, babe. I have parked my horse nearby. As the only heir to my fortune, imagine. I have 5 acres in Norfolk. I'm absolutely minted. I went to the theatre. It was really romantic. Don't you want to dance with me? Shake it loose. Up and down. You want some rumpy pumpy?
I promise you all the pleasures in the world. But you're not going to get it.
What?
I'm teasing. Will you do everything for me now?
What?
What a time we have! Out of joint, honestly. Funerals and weddings. Funerals and weddings. Claudius promised me that if I do well, I can be the best man at his next wedding. I'm so excited. So happy to be here. The bar's open all night. Can't wait. Public speaking is like sex for old people. The first few minutes are the hardest, and then it's all over. So let's crack on with it. It's a really sad day. It's a sad day for all the single guys out there, because another beauty is off the market. And a lucky day for all the ladies, as Another stalker is down and shackled. Gertrude and Claudius, I'm so proud. So proud of Gertrude's integrity. So proud of Claudius's focus. He always gets what he wants, but his conscience is clean, I can assure you. It should be, as it's never been used. You will leave today with a wife known for her kind heart and radiant beauty, unprecedented wit and loyalty. My queen, let me tell you how lucky you are. You will leave today with a wonderful dress and exceptional hair. To Gertrude and Claudius, the ruler of our kingdom and the ruler of his heart.
It didn't work particularly well.
No, it never does.
That was a piece of new writing called Gertrude, and it was written by Peter Klinger. The part of Polonius was played by Jonathan Lloyd. King Hamlet was played by Gabrielle Horne. Ophelia was played by Abigail Morgan. Gertrude was played by Caroline Short. And Baby Hamlet was played by Thomas Windsor, who did a fantastic impression of a baby. It was very authentic.
It was very authentic.
So you've just heard two pieces of new writing that have been recorded by us here at Blackshaw Theatre. Ellie's going to give you a little bit of information about how you could potentially submit stuff.
Yeah, so we mentioned the new writing nights. You can submit, just go to our website, blackshawonline.com, and you can find out how to get being a part of those. We're also interested if you have any ideas in general about things that you want to be included on the radio, or if you have any comments on what you've heard and you want to have a discussion with us, then please do get in touch. We are on Twitter at Blackshaw Update. We're on Facebook, we're just /Blackshaw Online, and we'd love to hear from you. And also, if you have any recommendations for what Matt Boothman should go and see and review for us on the next show, you can tweet him at Matt Boothman.
Yes, Vicky would love to have suggestions for arts things because she's always up for a discussion.
Absolutely. If you've got any burning desires for things that you want covered or something that you've a particular arts thing you've been to that's interesting, then let me know.
Or intel for us or questions or anything. We do anything here on the show. And that's us done for another week. Up next is Gits and Shiggles. We're going to say goodbye. So thanks, girls, for being in the studio with me.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
We will be with you again for another edition of the Blackshaw Arts Hour in a fortnight's time. And, yeah, goodbye, and thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.